Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Broadside's Dawn of Steel. You saw Broadside's Empires of Steel being demonstrated in our Goeben versus Admiral Truebridge battle, but today, by popular vote on the community post, we're doing the Hunt for the Red Kamchatka to demonstrate the Dawn of Steel rules. So, in this particular scenario, this is a slightly alt-history Battle of Tsushima scenario, you can see here, the good old Kamchatka is surrounded by what in this scenario are the survivors of the Battle of Tsushima. Obviously, not the historic survivors of Tsushima, but it's a nice grab bag of different capability ships from the new range. Now, they are in the middle of our game board. So we've got our special orders cards as normal. We've got our turning templates as normal. But what we have here are three squadrons of Japanese ships. Again, somewhat ahistorical, but I've thrown them together again from the available models because I think it'd be interesting to demonstrate a range of abilities. So we've got a kind of a cruiser squadron here, we've got a battleship squadron here, and we have some armored cruisers with the infamous Japanese torpedo boats here. So what we're going to be doing is Kamchatka's objective and her escorts is to get from the center of the board to the edge of the board, which should take Kamchatka 6 turns as she's currently 36 inches away from the edge of the board, and I've given her a 6-inch movement. And she's starting off at full speed. Now we have our stat cards for the various ships. These are all just printed off at the moment because, of course, those are still slightly in beta. And there are a few differences in the rule set compared to Empires of Steel. Not too many, but I will quickly list them off now in case you're wondering. So where you would use a D6 in Empires of Steel, you use a D10 in Dawn of Steel. The ranged in tokens, which you'll remember gave you an advantage to hit if you were the ship that fired them, but if it was another ship that fired them, you got a disadvantage to hit. Now they just reduce the target size number on the ship card, because obviously we don't have quite as complicated direct firing as we did as we do in the World War I period. This is a pre-dreadnought period game. Gunnery control, which is one of our specialist cards just here, that allows you in this game to ignore anything else that's happening on a ship that might otherwise affect you. So in the game at the moment, if you have flooding tokens, specific damage cards, range in tokens, hull damage, etc., that will affect your ability to hit the enemy ship, but if you have gunnery control, that removes that. There's also a new keyword, which is devastating, which ships like Mikasa here have, and they have that on their main battery. So with the devastating keyword, hull damage caused is every number above the required firepower. So, for example, after you've resolved firepower and protection, which you'll see during the game, if your target number is, say, 6 and you're rolling a d10, if you roll a 10, so that's 4 above a 6, you inflict 4 hull damage instead of 1. There's also another keyword, deadly, which means that a ship has a protection value of 0 when you're calculating the hull damage. And that really pretty much just applies to torpedoes, because of course torpedoes will completely bypass armor, and this is an era before torpedo defenses. And then we have squadrons. So you might notice the Japanese torpedo boats and the Russians up there are in squadrons. You've got three little models on the single item, as opposed to in Broadside Empires of Steel, you have a single destroyer per stand. Now, the squadron as a whole can only launch its torpedoes once per game, but you treat each ship in the squadron as an individual ship. So if the squadron's coming in and fire is opened on them and a result is scored that would destroy the value on the card, then you mark that one of those ships is destroyed. So the ships may still keep coming and may still launch a successful torpedo attack. Everything else is the same as in the previous rules. So, in our particular scenario, how are the Japanese going to try and stop the Russians? Well, as I said, we've got our three squadrons. So what we're going to do is we're going to roll our new D10 instead of D6. So I'm going to choose some red ones, because it's the Japanese. And we know where Kamchatka's trying to get to. So we've divided the board up into four sides. So you've got one is going to be the side that Kamchatka's trying to get to. Two is this one. Three, this one. Four, this one. And then go around again. So five, six, seven, eight. So we're going to roll our D10. And whichever number comes up will dictate which side the first Japanese squadron comes in on turn one. And if it rolls a 9 or a 10, then we'll re-roll, and that means two squadrons will come in on turn one, because otherwise we're going to have one squadron come in on turn one, and then the other two, again randomly decided, will come in on turn two, because this signifies essentially that the Russian squadron has fled from the Battle of Tsushima. These are the Japanese squadrons that are chasing them, and obviously turn one, one of them's found them, their signal to everybody else, and then everybody else turns up on turn two. Unless they get really lucky, as I said, with a 9 or a 10, then either two or all three might show up. So let's find out first which side is the first Japanese squadron coming in on. It is 2. So that means it's coming in on the port side of the Russian formation. And let's find out which squadron is going to actually be the one coming on. Again, we're going to use D10 because we have D10. So it'd be 1, 2... 3, and then again, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 will be a reroll. 9, so that will be this squadron. So we're going to have Japanese torpedo boats, along with the Kurama and Ibuki, coming in first turn. And then on the second turn, the battle squadron and the cruiser squadron will come in, but we don't know where they'll be coming in just yet. So let's get set up. Now, in the previous game, when we played with Gerben against Truebridge, it was fairly easy because there was just one Gerben on the field, so the Germans just had one activation turn. However, in the game, you are supposed to activate ships alternately. Now, of course, the Japanese are going to have the initiative here, so they're going to be moving first. So we're going to start off with the Kurama here, which is going to move 7 inches. And then it's going to make a turn of 30 degrees, which is what it can do as an armoured cruiser. Okay, so Kurama has moved and turned, so we're now going to check range. So the range is, from centre to centre, about 13 and a half inches. So we check against her stats, and she's got a 15-inch range band, so she is in the first range band. So we check against that, and at close range, which is 0 to 15 inches, there is a negative 2 modifier to hit. So look at Ascolt, and Ascolt's target size is a 4 up, so minus 2. So we only need a 2 up to hit, and because she's broadside on with those 12-inch guns, she gets 4 dice. But Ascolt has an evasion score of 8, so Ascolt can try and evade the incoming shot. So on an 8 plus, the shots go away. 2 9s, so that's quite lucky for Ascolt. So 2 of the shots are evaded. But since these are 12-inch guns, these are devastating. So now we are going to roll to hit. So the firepower value of these 12-inch guns is 2 plus. Ascolt has 0 protection, so there's no modifier, so it's hitting on 2. But a roll of a 2 will do a point of damage. Anything more than a 2 does additional damage based on how far above 2 it is. So 9 plus 3 is 12. Ascolt only has 10 health, so Ascolt is completely dead. So we're just going to put a sideways blast marker on her. It doesn't really matter. We don't need to put any more ranging tokens out because no one else is going to be shooting at her. But, of course, because the game turn simulates the entirety of what's happening, all resolving at once, Ascolt will still get to do something later this turn before sinking at the end of it. So, that's the Japanese shooting done, for the primary battery at least. So now we can look for the secondary battery. So what's the secondary battery going to shoot at? Well, we've shot at Ascolt, so let's shoot at Imperator Alexander the third, which is 16.5 inches away. So we've got our 4 8-inch guns there on the side. And if we check 8-inch guns, okay, so that is a range band of 10. So we're in the second range band with a firepower of 4 up. So in the second range band, which is 10 to 20 inches, there is no modifier for hitting. But we're going to be firing at the Imperator Alexander III. So let me just check. Here we go. So Imperator Alexander III has an evasion of 9, but has a protection of 3 and a target size of 4 up. So we'll be hitting on 4s. No modification this time because she's a big target, but she's somewhat further away than is ideal for pre-dreadnought engagements. And we have a firepower of 4 up with a protection value of 3, so we're going to need 7s to hit, which is a little bit of a taller order on a detail. Well, 7s represent a hit that does damage. So we've got our 4 dice, and let's see first if she can score any 9s to evade the 8-inch fire. Very unlikely. A 10, okay, so she evades 1. 1, 2, and 6, so that's fine. So 3 8-inch shells coming in, and we need 7s to damage. These aren't devastating, so they'll just do a point of damage. And we got 1 and a 3, no. But we got a 9, so that has done a point of damage to Imperator Alexander III. And it has also inflicted a damage card. So we're going, Imperator Alexander III has 20 hull points. So I'm going to use these orange dice, I think, to count damage. Where's the 9 gone? There it is. So there we go. She has 19 health remaining. And we're going to draw a damage card for her. And the damage card is steering damage. When this ship moves, it must turn to port. It must turn completely the full degrees listed on its turn angle set. So her rudder has basically been jammed, which is a bit inconvenient for her. Obviously, this is not the size of the normal card. You can see this is the size of an actual game card, but these are the prototype cards, so when I printed them out, they came out really big. But there you go. So steering damaged on Imperator Alexander III. And then, well, there aren't any other guns for me to fire that are going to do anything of any real import. So that's Kurama done. Let's go over to the Russians. And, the Russians are in a little bit of a pickle because obviously they need to move their leading ships first. So first off, let's get the Buini squadron, their little torpedo boat unit. Let's get them moving. They've started off at 6 inches. They can accelerate +2 or -2 each turn, and they can turn 45 degrees. Now, while it might, in theory, sound like a good idea to accelerate, of course, they can only turn at the end of their turn. So that's going to take them miles off this way. Let's pan over to the Guini squadron. There they are. So, yeah, we don't want them. So here they are. So we don't want them to go rocketing off this way and then take ages for targets to come up. So actually, they're going to slow down to just 4 inches, and then they're going to make their 45 degree turn. So I'm going to go there. And now I'm not giving them any special orders at this point, other than the order to make a smoke screen, because that's going to make them harder to hit. So that's their turn there. And as you can see, they're now going to try and cut across the top of the Japanese squadron. And we'll give them the smoke screen special order. Just put it there for people to see. Pop that back. And then I've got my smoke screen marker. So we know they are currently obscured and they're going to be harder to hit. Right, so over to the Japanese again. So Ibuki here is going to slow down. And she can only slow down by 1, but that's going to mean a 5-inch move, so she's going to move here. Let's pan over to Ibuki. There we go. And the reason I'm not turning her is because, of course, these big armored cruisers do have torpedoes. So while Kurama was kind of a testing run, if you like, Ibuki's going to try and get a little bit closer to engage with torpedoes as the game goes on. So what can she engage? Well, there's no point in engaging Ascult. She is broadside onto Imperator Alexander, and she actually does have gun batteries capable of hurting her. So it only makes sense to try that. So we've got our four 12-inch guns again. Firepower 2. We already know Imperator Alexander has an evasion score of 9. So we're going to roll our 4d10. 6, 4, 5, and 0. So that's a 10. So again, Imperator Alexander invades one of the shots. But unlike the 8-inch guns that were coming in earlier, these 12-inch guns are considerably more dangerous. So let's check our firepower values. So we have a firepower of 2+. Let's check our range bands because we might be a bit further away. We are actually just about within 15, so we're going to maintain our -2 modifier to hit. We have a target size of 4+, so we're hitting on 2s. 9, 9, and 6, that would be really good for damage, but at least all 6 dice have hit. And now we have our firepower of 2+, and we compare that with protection of 3, so that gives us a total modified value in order to do damage of 5. So damaging on 5s, and this time again we have devastating, so additional damage going through for any score above 5. 4 does nothing. And 8 and 8. So we have 2 that go through and each do 3 points of damage. So that's another 6 points of damage off of Imperator Alexander there. So that's 9 and 3. So she only has 13 points of damage remaining. And another damage card. Clear the decks. Unless this ship is in a damage control order, you must prepare all clear the decks cards before choosing to repair any other damage cards on this ship. So that goes on top of her steering damaged. And so we've also obviously got the 8-inch batteries. So again, 4 dice evasion for Imperator Alexander. Again, manages to evade 1 dice. She's consistently evading 1 dice. Now, those secondary batteries, again, we have a target size of 4+. But we are now in the second range band, so no modification. So 4+ to hit instead of 2s. 4, 6, and 10, so all 3 hit. And then, of course, they have a firepower of 4 with a protection value of 3, so 7s to do damage. 2 and 3 do nothing. 8 does 1 damage because, of course, they're not devastating, so hull goes down to 12. And we draw another damage card. This one is heavy casualties. The ship's discipline stat is increased by 1. This card cannot be repaired. So that's not doing particularly well for poor old Imperator Alexander. But that's the end of Japanese turn 2. So let's see what they're going to do next. Well, the Russians going to do next, more specifically. So Ascult is going to... Let's see, what can she do? I do want her to advance, but she's obviously going to die at the end of this turn. So whatever she can do needs to be done this turn. So her primary battery has a firepower of 5+. Her secondary and tertiaries have a firepower of 10 and 11. So they're not going to do really anything to an armored cruiser that has a positive protection value. So she started out with a movement of 6. The closest she can get, she does have torpedoes, but the torpedoes need to be within 8 inches. She can't... Well, she could maybe get, if she can turn there... So yeah, so she's going to decrease her speed by 1. So she's going to move 5 inches. And then she is going to turn. So put the range markers out here as well, because Imperator Alexander was being shot at by two ships and hit by two ships. So now Ascalt can turn up to 45 degrees. So, and as you can see from the broadside line, she still kind of just about has a bearing on Kurama there. Is that going to bring her? No, she's not quite within 8 inches, so she's not going to be able to launch her torpedoes, which is a little bit sad for her, but she can still get her 10-gun primary broadside off. So that has a range band of 8, so we know that she's in the secondary range band, therefore no modifier to hit. So if she's firing at Kurama, Kurama has a target size of 4 up and has an evasion value of 8 up, 8 plus. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So 8 to evade Ascalt shots by Kurama, a 10 and 2 9s. So she evaded 3 shots. So 7 shots to hit with the target size of 4, no modification, so 4s to hit. 2 and 1 get removed, 3 gets removed. So 4 hits. And we have a firepower of 5 versus a protection value of 2. So that is a 7 to hit, so 7s to hit. 6, 2, 1, and 3 does nothing. So bounce, 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 bounce. Just get a single splash there. And that's all Ascalt can do, unfortunately, because although she does have these other guns, they're just not going to do anything to Kurama. So the Russians have moved twice. The Japanese moved twice. Now we're over to the Harusame squadrons. So they were starting off moving at 6 inches, but they can move up to 9 with a rapid acceleration of plus 3. And they're also going to lay smoke screens. So the first Harusame squadron is just motoring off there. There it is, Japanese torpedo boat squadron. Obviously aiming to cut off the Russian squadron at the head. So we've got our smokescreen marker, because again, they're going to use a smokescreen special order. I haven't used special orders on the Japanese capital units, because I'm assuming, just for the purposes of this scenario, that for the first turn, they're going, hey, guys, look, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that we can we can shoot at. So please, come and join us. So they're signaling on the radio, thus they're not getting any special orders. And Ascalt, of course, was busy being shot. So over to Russian turn, the Russian turn. So Imperator Alexander here, making sure again we've got the right stats for her. There we go. So she can only move a maximum of 6 and plus or minus 1. There's no point in her really doing anything other than moving ahead. So she's just going to move ahead by 6 inches. And now this is the point where I realise I should have accounted for these range markers when Ibuki was shooting at her, but such is life. So she is going to, I'm going to give her a gunnery control special order. And we're going to change perspectives so we can see this from the Russian point of view now. Now, of course, we don't have the ranging in section that you do in the World War One version of the game, but gunnery controls mentioned at the very start allows me to ignore other chaos like flooding tokens, damage cards, the various splashes that are going on, and hull damage. So that this is why I've put the gunnery control in, so that poor old Imperator Alexander doesn't just miss with absolutely everything. So starting out with the primary battery, of course, we have 4 12-inch guns with a range band of 15. We already know that everything's well within range. But just to double check for the sake of argument, yes, that's well within the 15 inch. So that's going to be a -2 to hit. And our target has a target size of 4. So we have 4 shots with an evasion factor of 8. A 0, so that's a 10. So that's 1 shot has been evaded. And then we are now obviously going to roll to hit. So target's size 4 up, -2 because we're in the closest range band. So hitting on 2s, 2, 3 and 9 just as well. So all 3 hit. And then we have the firepower of 2 versus a protection of 2. So 4s to damage. And being the 12-inch guns, of course, they are devastating. So anything above 4 also does a lot of damage. So 3 does nothing. 8, so that does minus 4, that does 4 damage. And 10, minus 4, that does 6 damage. So that's 10 damage in total against a total hull value of 13. So we'll break out our orange damage tracker dice. And Kurama only has 13 hull points left. And splish, splish, splish. There we go. Kurama's not in a particularly good way, and of course she has to draw a damage card. The bridge has been hit. This ship ignores the effect of its order card unless it is damage control. So poor old Kurama, if she ends up surviving this turn, she is going to have a bit of a problem shooting back, because she's got all these splash markers, ranged in tokens, which is going to make life very difficult for her. And yeah, this is why pre-dreadnoughts and armored cruisers didn't tend to try and fight it out at absolute point-blank range, but that's where the scenarios dumped them, so such is life for them. Now, what else has Imperator Alexander got? She obviously has a secondary and a tertiary battery. Now, the tertiary battery has a firepower of 10, which with a protection value of 2 is going to require a 12 up to do damage on D10, so that can't really help her. But the secondary battery has a broadside of 8 with a firepower of 5, so we can potentially finish Kurama off with this. Now, of course, it's not devastating, so we're going to need a reasonably large number of hits. The range band on these is 8 inches, so it's going to be no bonus to hit, so hitting on 4s, but after evasion. So evasion of 8, 1, 2, 3 evaded. Still possible to sink Kurama at this point with Imperator Alexander. So 4s to hit, all hit. And the firepower, as we said, is 5. The protection value is 2. So that means 7s to do damage. 2 doesn't do damage. 2 doesn't do damage. 3 doesn't do damage. 6 doesn't do damage. 8 does 1 damage. So we've chipped off 1 more health off of Kurama. And she now has a shipboard fire. So when she activates, she takes +1 damage, which is obviously not going to do great things for her, but she may not be around by the end of the turn, because obviously there's a lot more Russians to go. Because over on the Japanese side, we just have the other Harosame squadron, which is going to go its 9 inches. It's also going to deploy smoke screens. I'm going to put this smoke screen token between the two. So we know all the destroyers are under smoke screens. And that's all the Japanese turn for this turn. So what are the Russians going to do? Well, perspective shift again. So I think you've kind of got the flavor of how this all works, but I do realize you probably don't want to then watch another hour and a half, 2 hours of gameplay report in just a regular video. If you do, incidentally, then the full length version of this will be uploaded for free on my Patreon, link in the description below, so you can go and have a look at that. But a very quick summary of what happened in the next bit, which I recorded in full length. The remaining Russian ships, so the Oryol, the coastal defense ships, etc., all at the back, they managed to finish off both of the Japanese armored cruisers. Not really surprising, considering there are a lot of devastating guns involved. And then we moved on to the next turn, and obviously that meant the arrival of the next two Japanese squadrons. The cruiser squadron ended up arriving in the opposite direction from the board edge that the Russians wanted to reach. The battleship squadron came in basically where the two armored cruisers had been. And then there was a little bit of a back and forth. The Japanese battleships managed to finish off the Imperator Alexander III. The Russian Buini squadron, the destroyers dash torpedo boats, lost one of their torpedo boats but moved in to cut off the head of the Japanese advance. The Japanese torpedo boats moved ahead as well, having lost a number of their ships. One squadron lost two of their torpedo boats, the other one took some damage from one of them. And the Shikishima took a bit of a plastering as well in return, thanks to Russian fire. And it was at that point that I then started recording turn summaries. So we'll revert just to the turn summaries so you can see how the rest of the scenario played out. As I said, if you want to see essentially what I just described, but in full gameplay detail, then link it below in the video description. So we're going to move on to summaries now, because otherwise the video is going to last as long as the game, which is going to be all day. So Aurora opened fire with her primary batteries. The Harasame squadron here evaded them all. Aurora then opened fire with her secondary batteries. The Harasame squadron evaded almost all of them, but she managed to land three hits, which is enough to finish off the last of the Harasames. So at the end of this turn, this Harasame squadron is going away, so it's got to do something pretty darn soon. And speaking of doing something, the Harasame squadron advanced, dropped its two torpedoes from its broadside at Aurora. Aurora managed to evade one, but the other one hit, and thanks to the devastating yield, it did 13 damage against a value of 9. So Aurora has been sunk. So essentially, you can imagine this as the last surviving member of that Harasame squadron just rushing in, Aurora blowing it out of the water, but just as it is blown out of the water, it's dropped a couple of torpedoes, and Aurora, not noticing them, but evades at the very last minute, avoids one, the other one hits her broadside on, and down she goes. So the Russians are down by a cruiser, and the Japanese are down by a torpedo boat unit. So then Gromoboy has advanced and has opened fire full battery on the small cruiser Tsushima. Primary, secondary, and tertiary batteries all able to fire. There was some accuracy reduction because obviously firing past the Harasame squadron, which is going to sink at the end of the turn. But as you can see, that's reduced the Tsushima's hull down to 4 from her original value of 8. And the ship's speed is dropped by 1, assuming that she survives this turn. Japanese activation. Asahi, seen here on the left, opened fire at Sisoi Veliki, but between some pretty good evasion rolls by Sisoi Veliki and some utterly appalling gunnery by Asahi, failed to do anything at all. Completely missed with a main battery and then failed to do any damage with the secondaries. So I guess it's over to the Russians. Oryol's pretty much returned the favour, advancing up, firing at Shikishima in an attempt to do even more damage. Unfortunately, again, through a combination of misses and failing to do much of anything, Oryol has effectively done nothing to Shikishima, although she has managed to damage one of Shikishima's main battery turrets. So that's something, at least. Japanese. And last of the Japanese battleships, Fuji, has advanced up and broken the run of the last two sets of shooting being absolutely terrible. Not brilliant shooting. Sisoi Veliki managing to dodge and weave like an absolute madman, but taking a number of heavy hits, Sisoi Veliki down to 6 hull points. Sisoi Veliki, meanwhile, advances and tries to put more damage on Shikishima, concentrating, of course, on the more damaged Japanese battleship, but fails to do anything. Then Izumo storms forth, and although a relatively lackluster amount of gunnery at Gromoboy only took her down by 3 hull points, down to 12. Izumo then unleashed her torpedo battery, and the torpedo battery took Gromoboy down to just 2 with a single hit. One was evaded, but one torpedo hit, and that was enough to do massive damage. So poor old Gromoboy, somewhat in trouble now. So grouping these two results together, Navarin and Admiral Nakamov both tried to take potshots at Shikishima. Navarin did nothing, and Nakamov managed to take off another hull point, but that's quite important because we have a 2 flooding token set situation on Shikishima, and that's taken her hull points down to 2. So if she doesn't repair either the at least one of the flooding tokens at the end of the turn, Shikishima is going to sink anyway. And that's also all the Russian activation's done. It's just what the Japanese cruisers up top are going to be doing now. So because there's literally just these actions left to do, All the three Japanese cruisers have advanced. Asama opened up full broadsides on Gromoboy, managed to take off her final point of health, so Gromoboy is gone. And that just leaves the two remaining Japanese ships with a little bit of forward firepower, which they can use now. And with nothing else left to do, Tokio and Nitaka, both advancing, shooting their forward guns at Oryol, didn't do a huge amount of anything other than inflicting a clear the decks damage card, which, well, there aren't any other damage cards. So that brings us almost to the end of the turn. But there are a few things we need to resolve first. The Buini Squadron is obviously still around, but as you can see, there's a flooding token over here on Izumo. So we have to try and fix that, otherwise she's going to take damage. She has a discipline value of 10 on 2d6, so 7. She fails, so the flooding remains, and Izumo goes down to 5 hull points. And coming back over here, of course, Shikishima, there's a whole raft of things wrong with it. But the main thing is that flooding token. Now, I could try and repair the fire, could try and repair the turret damage, but if I don't repair at least one of the flooding tokens, and I only get one damage control repair, then Shikishima is going to sink this turn. So Shikishima, where have you gone? Has a discipline value of 11. And she scores a 16, so the flooding tokens go down by 1. Shikishima takes 1 point of damage, so I've just realised that 0 there. I was actually making the whole thing out to be a far more serious problem than it was, because Shikishima started out, of course, with 20 hull points, so she's actually down to 11. So she's not in danger of sinking anytime soon, but she's going to take one more point of damage when she activates because of the fire, and potentially more damage because of the flooding. Nonetheless, at the end of turn 2, these are the casualties. Kurama, Ibuki, and a Harosami squadron for the Japanese, and the Askold, Aurora, Gromoboy, and Imperator Alexander III for the Russians. Although there are more Japanese ships with hull damage remaining than the Russians, but Kamchatka, come over here, as you can see, is somewhat exposed, and there's a number of Japanese ships that are in a position to possibly try and board her next turn. So start of turn 3, both sides chose to activate their torpedo squadrons first. The Harosame is coming to cut across, heading for Kamchatka, so she can see oncoming Japanese torpedo boats. The Buinis, on the other hand, had a fantastic turn. Although there's only 2 of them left, they unleashed a torpedo salvo into the Izumo and managed to sink it with a rather catastrophic hit. And then with their single rear-firing set of guns, managed to take 1 point off the Harosame squadron, which of course only had 1 hull point left on one of its ships, thus sinking one of the Japanese destroyers despite the smokescreen. So it's now over to the second Japanese turn, and Izumo's probably going to try and get some revenge. And well, Izumo decided it was not going to go quietly into this good night, unleashing its entire gun battery on the Buini squadron, sinking one of the remaining Russian destroyers and reducing the other one down to just 2 hull points, then unleashing its torpedo battery and getting a double hit on Oryol, taking Oryol down from 20 hull points to just 4. In response, Oryol moves up, unleashes all its firepower on Asama, because Izumo, remember, is sinking from those torpedo hits. Doesn't manage to do a tremendous amount. Asama starts out with 13 hull points, she's now down to 9, and the one torpedo that Oryol has fails to do anything. But she does have a torpedo which she can fire at Tokiwa in her forward arc, so let's see how that goes. Tokiwa taking 3 hull points of damage from a torpedo hit from Oryol. So that's the Russian activation. The next Japanese move was for Tokiwa to advance down the side of Oryol, unleash a couple of torpedoes into Oryol, comprehensively, massively overkilling the damaged Russian battleship, and then put a point of damage onto Navarin with its forward guns. So the Russians are now down to just their 3 rear echelon vessels and the Buini squadron. So for her activation, Asama's pulled in behind the sinking wreck of the Izumo and finished off the Buini squadron. Sisoi Veliki breaks off from escort and, seeing Asama, opens up with both its forward torpedo tube and its forward primary battery, managing to inflict massive damage on Osama and sinking the Japanese vessel. Although the secondary battery fires she then directs against Shikishima doesn't do much of anything, but still the Japanese attack cruiser squadron is down to just Tokiwa, Tsushima, and Nakata, only one of their three big armoured cruisers left. Although, to be fair, the Russians have not got too many ships of their own left. Mikasa here moves up, and determined to prove why she's the flagship, a combination of devastating gunnery broadsides and a single long-range torpedo manages to put Sisoi Veliki into a sinking condition. In revenge, the Admiral Nakamov moves up and unleashes its entire battery plus its sole torpedo tube at the Tokiwa, just about collectively managing to inflict enough damage to sink Tokiwa. Shikishima comes along under gunnery control and manages to inflict considerable damage on Nakamov, just a massive volley of gunfire taking it down to three hull points and inflicting both a shipboard fire and a raging fire. So the shipboard fire means that Nakamov will take one more hull damage the next time she activates, and the raging fire means that when she activates she'll also take a damage card, assuming of course she's still around by the end of all of this. And finishing up the Russian turn, the Navarin manages to advance up and deliver quite a creditable series of blows to Shikishima, taking her down to just six hull points, which of course could be a little bit of a problem for her going forwards. But that's it. All the Russian ships are either activated or sunk, and we still have two Japanese battleships and two Japanese cruisers to go. In response, Asahi moves up, and her combined gunnery doesn't do tremendous amount, reduces Navarin down to eight hull points. Then it's Fuji's turn, and she manages a lackluster set of shooting, only taking one more hull point off Navarin, but is close enough to unleash her torpedoes at Nakamov, managing to sink Nakamov. So the Russians are down to just Kamchatka and a very, very battered Navarin. The Japanese still have two cruisers to activate, although admittedly they're not particularly powerful ones. Both Tsushima and Nataka activate. Tsushima's just moving off here to try and position herself better to repair herself. So both Tsushima and Nataka activate. Tsushima's just moving here to try and better try and intercept Kamchatka. Nataka over there took a broadside at Navarin, but Nataka doesn't have torpedoes, so it's just her guns. Only her primary guns had any chance of damage, and they didn't do anything. So now it's time to clear the board of all these sunken vessels. And now that's what it looks like. There's Kamchatka, a very battered Navarin, and a host of Japanese ships all closing in. Over here at the casualty rack, you can see the Russians have taken by far the most losses, but it's not been a good day to be a Japanese armoured cruiser. Every single armoured cruiser the Japanese have fielded has been sunk. And so we reach the climax of the game. Actual Japanese torpedo boats have made it into base-to-base contact with the Kamchatka, which is, of course, carrying Admiral Rozazvensky. Let's see if, on a very, very remote chance, Admiral Rozazvensky's binocular throwing sees off the boarding parties. It does! I was looking for a 9 or a 10. So Rozazvensky just hurling binoculars left, right and centre, presumably hitting some poor Japanese boarder in the head and knocking him off into the sea, which means that Kamchatka will have to be boarded by something else this turn. Now we find ourselves in a bit of an odd position. Navarin managed to take out one of the Harosame squadron before being unsurprisingly blown away by the combined firepower of the four Japanese pre-dreadnoughts. However, Kamchatka has managed to move away. Because she wasn't boarded in the last turn, or this turn, because she wasn't boarded successfully, she's actually bypassed everyone else. And although the two Japanese cruisers have come to new heading so that they are in a position to potentially try and intercept next turn, the simple fact is that Kamchatka, in one more turn, will be right at the board edge. Now, the Japanese battleships have all increased speed to maximum, so they've gone up to speed 7 under special orders, but it could be that there is only one more interception left in the game. So the Harusame squadron theoretically can intercept. If this boarding action fails, if Rozsvensky's binocular throwing proves to be as good as it was last time, then it's going to be down to possibly Mikasa catching Kamchatka at the edge of the table, depending on board activation turns. So let's see how that goes. So Harusame squadron is going to come about 45 degrees using the come about special order, which then allows it to move forward in base-to-base contact, which for this scenario is what they need to board. So once again, Rozsvensky is going to try and resist, and on a 9 or a 10 he succeeds. He doesn't. So sadly for everybody, except perhaps for the crew of the Kamchatka, this time, possibly maybe Rozsvensky was further forward and this time being boarded aft, he wasn't able to get in a throwing position. The Harusame squadron, or the last remaining ship of it, I should say, has managed to successfully seize the Kamchatka. The hunt for the Red Kamchatka is over. Admiral Rozsvensky is in the hands of the Japanese combined fleet, but it has cost everybody immensely. The Russians, of course, have had their entire escorting squadron wiped out, but the Japanese have lost 5 armored cruisers and 5 destroyers, because remember, 2 of the Harusame ships there have been destroyed, including the ahistorically rapidly completed Kurama and Ibuki, just blown clean out of the water early on in the engagement, and Shikishima is very badly damaged, and Tsushima is also somewhat badly damaged. So a costly victory for the Japanese, but nonetheless, they just about managed to pull it off.